Exit number 11907, rail 1.
Mr. Wollaston, rail 1. Now, in 1940, you were called away to the defence of Calais. Can you tell me which unit you were serving in and in which capacity when you went?
I was a full corporal with the 3rd Royal Tank Regiment. My position in the tank crew was fluid, either a driver, gunner, or commander.
What kind of tanks did you have at that time?
We were equipped with the ancient light tank, which was a Mark 6B, and the armament was a .303 and a .5 machine gun. We also had just been issued with the new cruiser tank. The number, I think, was A13. That had a 2-pounder with a coaxially mounted machine gun, 303 Beezer machine gun.
You said you were in that particular battalion. What subunits were you in? Squadron and so on.
I was a member of C Squadron.
And is the subunit of a squadron a troop?
A troop, yes.
Do you remember which troop you were in?
No.
Do you remember the people who were in charge of you?
When we left Fordingbridge, I was with... The commander was Major Warren. When we were assigned to tanks in Calais, my tank commander was a Lieutenant Moyer. I can remember. Can remember that. But it was a piecemeal operation. We were stood along the dockside. The tanks came off the ship, and it was a case of gunner, you, driver, you, commander, you. And we were then sent straight out of Calais to combat the German forces, which were then ringing Calais.
Let me go back a bit, and can you tell me how you first got the news that you were to go to Calais?
As far as I can remember, it was a rush order, almost in the middle of the night, as near as I can remember. We were put on a train and...
At Fordingbridge.
And all we knew was we'd arrived at Dover and were put on a... I think it was a Southern Railway cross-channel packet, pre-war. And we were without our vehicles, of course. They had been sent separately, I think, to Southampton. When we arrived at Calais, we were just lying alongside the Calais docks in the sand dunes, where we stayed overnight, being bombed by enemy aircraft.
With much effect?
Not really, no. No, I can't even remember any casualties.
How frightening was it?
On recall, not very. I think we were all young, all keen, and the consequence of any action by us or the enemy had no effect on us whatsoever. This is my opinion. I certainly wasn't frightened. I can't recall being frightened.
How did you and your comrades feel about being called to Calais? Did you feel confident or apprehensive or what?
I think we were quite confident that we would make a good job of it. We were a highly trained unit. We had been crewed into tanks for quite some time. We'd been taught to fire at moving vehicles from a moving vehicle, and this was the only units, armoured units in the world at that time, who could actually fire from a moving vehicle at a moving vehicle and hit it.
Did you feel confidence in the tanks?
In a way we did when we got the two-pounder, but I think we realised that it wasn't going to be big enough.
How much did you know about the German equipment that you'd be faced with?
Well, it was supposed to be made of wood, most of it, according to our reports and hearsay, but we encountered some light tanks which seemed to be on a par with the vehicles we had.
Now, can we pick up the narrative from where I interrupted you with you having been bombed?
We were assembled on the dockside the next morning, and the tanks were being unloaded. Most of them were still in mineral jelly, including the weapons. So we had cleaning of weapons to do before we could move off. But we were allocated piecemeal onto the tanks, and I think it was a matter of luck whether you became a cruiser or light tank crew. I was put on an A-13 as a gunner. We were all very adept and highly trained. We could switch from gunner to driver, wireless operator, etc. And a trooper Newman was driver, and Lieutenant Moyer, your tank commander. We proceeded out of Calais, which was very heavily populated with evacuees. The roads were crammed with persons of all descriptions coming into Calais for some reason as we were going out, but we eventually got out into the open ground, I suppose something like 5 to 6 miles outside Calais, and it appeared to me inside the tank that we were beginning to build up a formation, a troop formation. We engaged some motorcyclists in a nearby wood, and picked up a hull down position, that's just the turret showing, in in the back end of a farmyard. From there we were ordered to move along a road which presumably led back into Calais, and we were engaging some light tanks at 3 o'clock.
With what effect?
Not much. But this new cruiser tank had a power traverse, which was new to us. We'd always worked on hand traverse on the old tanks, and I was not very keen on the new power traverse, as it didn't give enough accuracy for firing on the move, and it wasn't, of course, it wasn't stabilized. The gun wasn't stabilized. So being on hand traverse, there was at this moment there was a God almighty crash on the gun, and the turret swiveled round a couple of times. My left wrist was badly damaged, and the tank commander stopped, and we all realised that the gun had hit a tree, and the driver, a chap called Titch Newman, was asked why he was driving on the right hand side of the road when he knew we were firing at 3 o'clock, and his answer was, well, we're in France, we have to. That is recorded in Airy Neave's book Flames Over Calais. So from then I was evacuated into Calais, where we were put in an underground car park with hundreds of wounded on stretchers. And the following day, I think this was now the fourth day, we'd had no sleep, no food, nothing to drink, and we were evacuated rather quickly onto the last ship that left Calais. The military police with fixed bayonets were on the gangways, refusing to allow any fit soldier to get on that ship, which happened to be the last one out of Calais. The rest of the forces were destroying equipment, driving lorries into the dockside, putting hand grenades into vehicles, and that was the last I saw of Calais.
Did you bring anything out?
Nothing. The pair of overalls I stood up in. That's all.
What was the state of morale at this time?
Everybody seemed reasonably cheerful, especially the ones that got on the ship, of course. Although they were all wounded, there were an awful lot of walking wounded. Minor wound. I think the effect was the youth was overcoming. The youthfulness of everybody was overcoming the fear, and the fact that we were on the ship kept our morale going, knowing we would be back into England to fight another day.
What was the name of the ship that you were evacuated with?
I can't remember.
You were listed as wounded in action, were you?
Yes. On record.
So what were your injuries?
A smashed wrist.
Broken in several places?
Yes, yeah.
When was the next time you went into action?
We sailed on the Stirling Castle from Glasgow. We went round the Cape. This was in September 40. We went round the Cape and arrived at Suez just before Christmas 1940. We carried out desert training and proceeded into the Western Desert at the beginning of 41, at which time we were withdrawn and sent to Greece. We travelled north to the northernmost part of Greece, facing the pass which led through to Yugoslavia. The tanks were dug in defensive positions. The vehicles were A-10s, and the track mileage was just about on the limit, so that when we did move forward on the German attack, the tracks on most of the tanks were so rusted through that they just broke, and we hardly had a vehicle to fight. We removed the breech blocks and dropped hand grenades into the turrets and started to withdraw on foot. We came right down through Greece to Athens, where I was asked to volunteer to man a wireless truck to go back to the front line and report to GHQ. I think it's Thermopylae, the last pass through to Athens, where I found the New Zealanders who were about on their last legs. They'd very little anti-tank weapons left, and advised me to go back to Athens and report to GHQ that they were finished and the Germans were coming through the pass.
What condition did the New Zealanders seem to be in, from what you observed?
They were in good spirits, but they were very very much on their last legs. They had very little. We had no air cover whatsoever. The Germans had full control of the air, and it was a hopeless task. What wasn't getting knocked out on the ground was being knocked out by air. On arriving near Athens, I had the choice of going left into Athens or right over the Corinth Canal and down into the Argos Peninsula. And there was a military police sergeant there who said he had orders to send all vehicles over the Corinth Canal and down into Argos. As we went over the Corinth Canal, the paratroopers were just beginning to come down. They were on their way down. I found GHQ about 7 miles down the road, and they immediately sent me back to the Corinth Canal to report on the situation. But on the way back, I was attacked by a very low flying aircraft which destroyed the vehicle. I was then out of touch with GHQ, and we started to walk. When we got back as far as GHQ, they were just evacuating on a Sunderland flying boat. That was General Wilson, Maitland Wilson. And we were then advised to carry on walking south. And one night we were advised that the Navy were coming in, and they sent in the longboats. They stood offshore and sent in the longboat, and we were evacuated to Alexandria.
Do you know where you were evacuated from?
Do I know where I was evacuated from? I did. No, I couldn't. It was just a stretch of beach. There were no towns or villages anywhere near.
What kind of a ship did you go across in? A cruiser or a
destroyer? Yes, it was Australian Navy cruiser. Can't remember the name.
How were you treated on board?
Marvellously, marvellously. Hot cocoa, sandwiches. Yes.
When you were saying we made our way through the Argos Peninsula, was that how many of you were together?
With me, there were three others that had manned the wireless vehicle. One radio operator and two on the... We had mounted two machine guns on the 1500 weight truck. So there were three of us.
What happened to you next?
We laid up in the desert. I think it was Tel El Kebir area. And as there were only around, I think it was 80 members of the regiment had returned, we were reformed with new soldiers from that just come out from England, and reformed as the 3rd Royal Tank Regiment. Carried on training, and I think we were then issued with the new Honey tank, the American Honey tank, and we trained on that with some American instructors in the Delta area.
What did you think of the Honey?
Wonderful in the desert, fast. Although it only had a 2-pounder, we evolved tactics whereby we'd dash in as fast as we could, get round the back or the side of the enemy tanks where they were more vulnerable to the 2-pounder. All in all, we were very, very pleased with it after the slower English tanks. Then we must have gone over the wire. We called go over the wire. That was the border between Egypt and Libya. It was just barbed wire. Called it going over the wire. In the November 41 push, which was a very, very fluid battle. I can remember the Holocaust of Sidi Rezaig.
Can you describe that?
From my point of view, at that time I had been appointed squadron navigator, which was essential in the desert, and it was necessary to know exactly where you were all the time, which meant that I had to stand off when a battle occurred so that the squadron could assemble on me afterwards and the squadron commander would know exactly his location. But I was situated up on a ridge and the battle was raging down in the wadi, and the other side of the wadi was the El Adem airfield on which there were German tanks. There was German infantry down in the wadi, guns, gunnery, artillery, and just below the lip where I was situated were two or three English 25 pounders. And I watched two of these being knocked out and felt that it was wrong for me to sit back there, even if I was a navigator. And I drove down into the melee which was going on down below and engaged some artillery and infantry who were dug in trenches, and came back very fast up the side of the wadi where I met the colonel, who was a Colonel Pip Roberts, well known later in the war, very efficient, very admirable commanding officer. Bob Crisp, Captain Bob Crisp, again, who was very well known at the latter part of the war. And we finished up with around 9 tanks, I would think. We withdrew from Sidi Rezaig and leaguered up one night and were again attacked by a heavy armoured German column. We moved again to new positions in the desert, and the 9 tanks were put under command of Bob Crisp, who ordered us to attack a heavy enemy column which was flanked by field guns. It became a cavalry charge, and the troop officer, I can't remember his name, took up the point position. The visibility was very poor owing to the sand being churned up, and he suddenly veered across my front, and my tank crashed into him. We had actually stopped about 6 to 8 feet from the artillery guns, and they had stopped firing because of our 2 tanks. We bailed out. The troop leader was killed. His gunner was very seriously wounded, and